content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. Going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, and we will read one section of this today. I witnessed history. Gen Z Gush was a teenager skipping school in Dallas. Dean Collar was a college kid walking on campus. Clara Jean Esther was a young woman hoping to meet a hero in Memphis. Each was an ordinary person who lived through an extraordinary event. On the following pages, you will read about people like us who saw a page or even a chapter added to the history of our time. And this article is by A.J. Baim. These are kind of things we would all remember where we were when they happened. We have a picture here of President John F. Kennedy and Jacqueline Kennedy in Dallas on the day of his assassination, riding in the open limousine with another car behind and the motorcycle beside. Death of the President. Gen Z Gush, 73, Director of Volunteer Services at the Suicide and Crisis Center in Dallas on the JFK assassination. On November 22, 1963, a friend and I decided to skip school. We knew that the president was visiting Dallas and that his motorcade was going to come right down Lemon Avenue. I was 15 years old, going to Rusk Junior High. The whole city came alive. It was the most exciting thing I had ever seen. I was standing on the curb on Lemon Avenue, wearing big pink rollers in my hair, when I saw the governor of Texas, John Connally. And then, there they were, the president and the first lady in an open Lincoln limousine. I was in awe. This was the Camelot era. There had never been a president like John F. Kennedy or a first lady like Jackie. I was surprised to see them in an open car and that there was no bulletproof bubble. But mostly I was thinking about how attractive he was. He had on a pinstripe shirt, and he had these bushy eyebrows. I looked at Jackie, who was the epitome of beauty, with lipstick that matched her pink suit. I waved at them, and President Kennedy's eyes fixed on me because I looked funny wearing these big pink rollers in my hair. He waved. About a half an hour later, after I saw the president, suddenly, I saw this lady hysterically screaming in front of what was then Skillern's drugstore. She was yelling, "They shot him! They shot him!" I thought she was talking about someone she knew, a family member or something. "They shot who?" I asked. "They shot the president." "No, no," I said. "We just saw him." I went into Skillern's drugstore and saw people huddled around a TV. No one spoke. It was surreal. That is when I heard Walter Cronkite say those haunting words. From Dallas, Texas, The Flash, apparently official. President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. I thought, this can't be happening. For days, it was all anyone could talk about. It was such a dark time for the whole world. My mother had previously worked as a waitress for Jack Ruby at the Carousel Club. So when Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested and Jack Ruby was captured on a television camera shooting Oswald, it was just unbelievable. Within a short period of time, the FBI showed up at our door. I asked, and there were two agents. I answered the door, and there were two agents with badges. I panicked, shut the door in their face, ran to get my mother, who was asleep. "Mother," I said, "my God, the FBI is here. Did y'all kill the president?" Somehow my young mind had made that leap. Of course, she had nothing to do with it. Looking back, it was something you never dreamed could happen, and certainly not in your own hometown. Now, we've been reading an article about long-term care from AARP, the Bulletin. Here's one from the Money Saver section of AARP, the magazine. Gene Shatsky to the rescue. Long-term care worries. A couple wants insurance but is having trouble sorting through all the choices. The problem. I have been shopping long-term care policies and opinions over the past several months and feel very confused, frustrated, and overwhelmed by this process, wrote Sheila Mabbitt, 50, an airline pilot who lives outside Nashville, Tennessee. Mabbitt was interested in a policy for herself and her husband, Mike Sturm, a 59-year-old with a landscaping business. She's in good health. He has type 2 diabetes, which is under control. Their bigger concern was that his mother had Alzheimer's. We just want to be sure that if he needs memory care, it's available to us, she explained. The advice. The possibility of needing long-term care and the expense of paying for that care often get people thinking about buying long-term care, LTC, insurance. But it can be an expensive and complicated purchase. Relatively few companies sell it, and fewer than 10% of Americans 50 and older have it. I'm constantly asked questions about LTC insurance, whether to buy it, when to buy it, what kind to buy, and how to buy it. Here's how I went over those questions with Mabbitt and Sturm. Should we buy it? Getting LTC insurance makes sense for a fairly specific group of people. Those who have too much in assets to qualify for Medicaid, which, unlike Medicare, will pay for long-term care in a nursing home or at home, but who don't have enough in savings to comfortably pay for that long-term care on their own. Mabbitt and Sturm sit squarely in that category. They have money for long-term care should they need it, but probably not enough. We're watching friends' parents, Mabbitt says. The next thing you know, one is in a full-time life care facility, and it's draining their savings. When to buy? Mabbitt is at the age where experts typically recommend people should start shopping for LTC insurance, says Jesse Sloan, executive director of the American Association for Long-Term Care Insurance. Sturm's diabetes is another reason to shop for LTC insurance sooner rather than later, says Sloan, since it will be harder to get coverage if his health worsens. While 14% of applicants between ages 50 and 59 are turned down for coverage, according to the AALTCI, rejections climb to 23% for people in their 60s. What kind? There are two types of policies, traditional and hybrid. Traditional, which is pure insurance, entails pricey annual premiums. A 55-year-old male, on average, will pay $2,220 a year, and a 55-year-old female, $3,700 a year, for a policy that will pay a benefit of $150 a day for 3 years, or $165,000 total, with a cost of living increase of 3% annually. If you don't need care, you don't get your money back. If you stop paying the annual premiums, which tend to increase over time, you lose coverage. Hybrid is a combo platter. It's typically either a life insurance policy that allows you to dig into the death benefit to pay for long-term care, or it's an annuity that pays more if you need care. Hybrids often have limited pay options, meaning you pay premiums for a set period of 10 or 20 years, but then you don't have to make more annual payments. Hybrid policies are typically more expensive than traditional ones, but these policies appeal to many people because they'll get some money back, even if they don't need any paid care. How to buy? Prices for all these policies have risen sharply in recent years. The annual premiums for 55-year-olds on that $165,000 policy, for example, jumped 31% for men and 38% for women since 2020. Mark Cohen, professor of gerontology at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, advises not to try to insure all your potential costs, but rather to supplement your savings with a smaller, more affordable policy. when you try to solve 100%, you often end up with nothing, he says. Another cost-saving tactic, check for any group plans offered through your place of work. It's a trend. According to the latest figures from the Society for Human Resource Management, the percentage of employers offering long-term care insurance as a supplemental benefit rose from 27% in 2016 to 39% in 2020. The outcome. Mabbitt and Sturm are weighing all of their options this spring, including some new plans that were available through Mabbitt's union. They weren't sold on those, however, saying the premiums weren't noticeably lower than what they were seeing elsewhere. The couple was leaning toward buying a particular hybrid insurance policy, one with premiums that could be paid over 10 years. But if Sturm's diabetes disqualifies him, he'll apply for a smaller benefit policy that he's more likely to qualify for. Our biggest concern is we want the premium paid before retirement, Mabbitt said. I don't want to be paying $6,000 a year until I'm 85 or 90. Want Gene Chatsky's help in sorting out a financial problem? Send an email to rescue@aarp.org. Okay, on to the Complete Guide to Memory, Centennial Health. We're talking about memories recovered through guided imagery that have not always been true. Your work on false memory stood in opposition to the recovered memory movement. This is with a discussion with author Alice Scold. You have been threatened and sued. Tell us a little about the controversy. I was threatened by recovered memory therapists and by the patients whom they had influenced. I sometimes had to have armed guards at speeches. People tried to get me fired. I was called a whore by a prosecutor in a courthouse hallway. I began working on a case where a grown daughter accused her mother of sexual abuse based on recovered memories. The daughter had allowed her story to be filmed and presented in public. When I began to work on the case, I began to become convinced that the mother was innocent and published an expose in a magazine called Skeptical Inquirer. I called the daughter Jane Doe, but the real daughter sued me, and the case took 5 years to settle. Meanwhile, some of the accusers eventually realized their memories were false and sued their therapists. Some parents who were falsely accused also sued the therapists. The recovered memory movement is not nearly as popular as it was in its heyday, but it's obvious that false memories are intruding in new ways. Take all the misinformation and fake news we see these days. Does this misinterpretation create dangerous false memories? Well, we've been walking around with bits of fiction in our memories for a long time. It's just that now we have a new source, online media, and we are inundated. One famous example of online false memories comes from 2015, when hundreds of Redditors discussed their fond memories of a movie called Shazam. There's no evidence anywhere that this movie was actually made. One of the Redditors wrote, "It feels like a part of my childhood has now been stolen from me. How does a movie simply vanish from our history?" Studies have indeed shown that when you're exposed to misinformation from media coverage, it can contaminate or transform your memory. In fact, we are motivated to fall for fake information that fits our pre-existing biases. Can we protect ourselves from this flood of misinformation? A few new studies give us cause for some optimism. In one of them, if you can get people to slow down and think, what is really the source of this information? Is this really my memory, or is it something I heard about somewhere? If you can protect yourself, at least somewhat. If memory is always malleable, how do we live with its flaws? First of all, we can realize there may be a benefit to malleability. Memory becomes a system which allows us to update our recollections with correct information when errors creep in. That's a good thing. Most people cherish their memories, of course. In many ways, our memories form our identities. They let us know who we are and where we came from. But just because somebody says something with great conviction or describes an event in great detail, it may not necessarily have happened that way. We can only really know the truth if there's a third party able to corroborate the information. We all make memory mistakes. Knowing that has made me more tolerant of my own fallible memory and that of my family and friends. Back to AARP, the bulletin. Your AARP, where we stand. This article is by Joanne Jenkins, CEO. Rethinking work and life. Older Americans are taking part in a great reflection. I'm sure you've heard news reports about the Great Resignation, the unprecedented mass exit from the workforce that was spurred by COVID-19. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, in 2021 alone, more than 47 million Americans voluntarily quit their jobs. Many younger workers left their jobs, often in the hopes of landing new ones that paid better, were more fulfilling, or granted greater flexibility. Reports have said, while older workers chose these transitional times to leave their work years behind. Sadly, high inflation and scary investment losses recently have sliced into retirement savings, pushing some older people back into employment. But for many, the decision to leave their jobs early was never just about work. I believe something much larger and significant is going on. The pandemic has given the entire country time to reflect on our lives and to ask if we needed a change. For many, the resounding answer was yes. Rather than the Great Resignation, we might then more usefully call this trend the Great Reflection, says Jeffrey Cole, director of the University of Southern California's Center for the Digital Future. Much of this shift is about reimagining our lives, whether we are working or in retirement. This time of reflection is about our mental health as much as our financial health. It's about focusing on the quality of our relationships and experiences and pursuing our passions. The center has some telling research on this attitude that was released as part of its COVID Reset project. That study found people today are valuing closeness to family and friends more than ever and are prioritizing experiences that create memories more highly than before. It also found that people want leisure time to travel and are eager for more education and training as part of personal growth. At AARP, we recognize that the way people are looking at work and retirement is changing, and we want to help older Americans who are part of that change. That includes those who are still showing up on the job or planning to re-enter the workforce. At a time when the demand for workers is high, older workers, like their younger counterparts, are seeking out employers that consider their overall well-being and can help them achieve the work-life balance they desire. Through our Living, Learning, and Earning Longer initiative, we work with employers to help them identify and implement promising policies and business practices with a focus on recruiting, retaining, and investing in a multi-generational workforce. And the AARP Employer Pledge Program helps experienced workers and those re-entering the workforce to identify companies that are committed to hiring older candidates and offering them the kind of work environments they desire, flexible hours, more autonomy on the job, and the freedom to have more family time. We recently launched a new initiative called the Business Case for Healthy Longevity to help employers transform workplaces into ones that will foster greater health, longevity, and well-being across the life course. The great reflection is far from over. It may take years before we fully understand its long-term impact on the way we live. What we do know is that it has led many of us on a newfound search for meaning in our lives. For now, AARP is here to help you wherever you are along that road, be it working or creating your best post-work life. Now a bit of information on Medicare. Medicare Made Easy. This is by Dina Bunis and from AARP, The Bulletin. Are immigrants eligible for Medicare coverage? It depends. To be eligible for Medicare, you must be a U.S. citizen or a legal permanent resident, meaning you have a green card. If you do, and you or your spouse has worked and paid Medicare payroll taxes for at least 10 years, you can get premium-free Medicare Part A hospital coverage and pay the standard required premiums for Part B, doctor visits and other outpatient services. Part D, prescription drug coverage, or Part C, Medicare Advantage. If you haven't paid Medicare taxes for 10 years, you can pay a monthly premium for that coverage as long as you've lived in the U.S. legally for 5 years. In 2022, the Part A monthly premium is $499. It drops to $274 if you or your spouse paid Medicare taxes for 7.5 to 10 years. If you're a new immigrant, you'll have to wait until you've been a legal U.S. citizen or resident for 5 straight years to qualify for the program, even if you are already 65. I have 2 homes, one in Maine and one in Florida. Will Medicare let me have a primary care physician in each state? If you are enrolled in Original Medicare, the answer is yes. You can see any provider who accepts Medicare, regardless of where in the U.S. you get your care. The same holds true for Medigap insurance. But if you are enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan, the private insurance alternative to Original Medicare, the answer is more likely no. Most MA plans are organized around networks of doctors within a zip code, county, or state. So if you prefer an MA plan, you'll need to check its rules for seeing out-of-network providers. Typically, you'll have to pay more for any non-emergency doctor visit, and it could be a lot more. That said, some MA plans do offer visitor or travel plans that might work for you. Some open enrollment time this autumn, or come open enrollment time this autumn, you may wish to shop around and see if you can find a plan that matches your needs. One final note, you'll also want to make sure your prescription drug coverage spans both regions. If you have Original Medicare, that means making sure that your Part D plan covers you for drugs from pharmacies in both places. Now let's look at a few more items from AARP The Bulletin on the In the News page. Productive in pajamas. Those of us who worked from home due to COVID-19 averaged 48 more minutes on the job per day than in the office, the National Bureau of Economic Research reports. Also good for productivity, the average meeting via video was 20% shorter than in person. Another item, COVID can lower your IQs, study suggests. The cognitive problems caused by severe COVID-19 are equal to losing 10 IQ points, or your brain aging from 50 to 70, says a team of scientists from the University of Cambridge and Imperial College London. Their findings, published in May in the journal eClinical Medicine, add to growing evidence that symptoms like brain fog from a bout with COVID can persist for months or even longer. The British study analyzed the symptoms of hospitalized COVID patients in 2020. They were given cognitive tests 6 months after admission and showed less accuracy and slower responses than a control sample of people who hadn't contacted COVID. Those findings align with others that report lingering effects from long COVID, which the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says is occurring in millions of COVID survivors. Greg Vanichkorn, MD of the Mayo Clinic, says that while the research continues, we really don't have long COVID nailed down yet. A big reason is because it looks like more and more symptoms can be associated with this condition. The list of long COVID symptoms maintained by the CDC includes everything from muscle pain and fatigue to digestive disorders. FCC rules target robocalls. The Federal Communications Commission has accelerated rules aimed at reducing the torrent of robocalls, many of them scams, that afflict older Americans every month. The requirements are aimed at gateway providers or smaller companies that move calls between larger networks. Scammers and other robocallers often use a technique called spoofing that lets them pick a fake phone number to appear on your caller ID. This makes it appear to be a local call, although many of them originate overseas. Most large telecom companies have been required by the FCC since last year to adopt a technical protocol called STIR/SHAKEN to verify that calls originate from the number that shows up on your phone. Smaller companies were given more time to comply, but robocallers simply moved their operations to those smaller gateway companies. To combat this, the FCC says that as of the end of June, those small companies must also implement the STIR/SHAKEN technology. Okay, let's look at a few more money-saving tips. We're still on groceries here. Pay with the right card. Many credit cards offer cash back today, but the amounts often vary by category. Search the internet for cards that offer the most cash back for groceries. You might find a card that will give you 5% back on food purchases. Websites like CardRates and NerdWallet let you compare your card with others. Double up with cashback apps. With services like Fetch Rewards, Coupons.com, or Ibotta, I-B-O-T-T-A, your grocery purchases earn points toward gift cards for various shopping options, such as Amazon, Target, and Walmart. Fetch Rewards, for example, have a section where you can see which brands will get you the most points. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.